Yeah, so welcome again to the last talk of Cousin. It's about two little open source projects I've been developing for quite some time. And first, to get a feel for the audience, who of you uses Tmux? Okay, that's most of them. Screen users? Okay. Detach users? Okay, also one. Yeah. So, and then who uses a tiling window manager? Okay, that's also multiple. Yeah, so maybe we can speed up or skip those. So, basically, who's heard of Oberon before?
Yay!
So, yeah, it's...
You need to hear about it.
Yeah. So it's basically a single-user operating system developed in the 80s, probably. Yeah, and used as a teaching tool at ETH. I can recommend it if you want to look into something, into a non-Unix operating system which you can still understand to some degree. And that's basically the user interface of it. So. As you can see, it's kind of like a tiling window manager. There's not much overlapping going on here. Screen space is used efficiently. Then, Acme from Plan 9. Anyone familiar with that? Yeah. That's basically from a text editor or a programming environment from Plan 9. Again, we have tiling UI where no overlapping windows occur, and basically it's split. Then in the modern world, the Unix world, there are a couple of examples for tiling window managers, which you're probably familiar with. So, and DVM is the one which is the most closely related to DVTM, which I'm talking about. But basically, we can say that DVTM is basically a port of DVM to the console, in some sense. And so what's this all about? Basically, I wanted to have a similar working environment which also works over SSH sessions. And so on, or frame buffer consoles, basically where you have no like real graphical system in place. And so we split basically the functionality. Abduka is like detach, in a sense, it provides session persistence, and DVTM is a tiling window manager for the console, and it's basically it multiplexes the console. And so, yeah, tiling window manager, I think you're all familiar with that. The basic idea is to let the window manager do its job, but not manually move windows around and stuff, but just optimally use the available screen space, and basically don't have to care about window placement. So history lesson. So that was the initial announcement to the SACLESS mailing list in 2007. So yeah, it was way back in my teen years, and I, to some degree, didn't know what I was doing at the time. Probably still don't know yet currently, but yeah. Yeah. So, and yeah, as announced, it's basically as DVM ported to the console. And yeah, it shares lots of concepts with it, basically. I don't know, is anyone here using DVM? Okay. Yeah, so that should be familiar with you. So we want to place windows at 20, as I said, and then we divide the available space into master and stacking area. So we'll show that later. We have a tagging concept, which is which can be sort of like workspaces but more powerful. And then we also have similar key bindings. In the terminal world, we have to prefix every command or every key with some kind of some prefix which you know, which doesn't conflict with lots of programs, ideally, and that's control T. Yeah. And then we also configure our source or the key bindings to editing the source code. So as you saw, the initial announcement was on the subclass mailing list, so it shares philosophy. Basically, we try to do one thing and do it well. That's also why we split the persistence of the sessions into a separate tool. We have no internal copy mode or something. We type the scrollback history to your editor, and then you can use your natural editing habits to basically shrink your interesting area to whatever you want, and then you can paste it into another window. So yeah, I think I've mentioned that. Yeah, that's one convenience. So in general, key bindings have to come configured through editing the source code. That has the advantage that you can. We have no special parser or so for a config file. We use the C preprocessor for that. Which should be familiar to the intended audience, I would say. And then we can create some windows. Now I will probably do that a bit interactively. So. So now I started UTM, as you can see, nothing happened basically, except if you now do have a scroll back history, which ST normally doesn't have. So that's again an example where multiple tools are combined. Now we can start creating windows. Basically now I've created four windows. Above you see basically the tags. Here would be some space for a status message. Yeah, then we can start focusing different windows. I think that's what this slide says. I don't know, that's the next one. So we can focus different windows. We can also create windows with the same working directory. So now I change the home directory. Like this only works if the proc file system is available. So Linux or with compatibility or proc emulation on other systems. Then we can focus a given window. As you see, they're numbered. So now if you want to focus window 4, then you can press G4, and then the focused window is indicated by a different title bar color. That's basically what this here is about. Yeah, then you can go back to the previous one with tab. So now we're back to 1. Exactly. Yeah, and so master and stacking area, that's what I'm touching about. So basically the concept of DVM, it divides the screen in two parts, with one which should have your primary attention, basically, which is typically the largest part. So in this case, it's this left part here. And then the remaining windows are stacked in the other part of the screen. So this here on the left is the master area, here's the stacking area. So that you know which window is which, so then we can...
Pony say.
Yes. Basically, DVM calls this tubing, so we can basically switch out the main window, so... What this does is basically swap these two. And then you can increase or decrease basically the splitting ratio between master and staff.
Well, can you decrease the main window by a lot and then press causal again?
Yeah, we don't have reflow, or what do you want to say?
Yeah, yeah. But the other way.
No, the other way. Yeah, I mean,
you don't have reflow, but at least can... Yeah, fine.
I mean, it keeps it in memory, But like Tmux, I think, has text reflow.
No, the fact that you don't have it is actually a good point.
Yeah, I agree. But, yeah,
but the question is whether it informs the terminal of the window changes so that the new applications can tell it properly.
Yeah, it should. I will come to that. Yeah. So yeah, you can increase it, and then you can also increase the number of windows you want to display. So at the moment it's one, but you can say I want to increase. So now I display two windows in the master area. But new ones will still go to the hidden stacking area, and then you can decrease it again. So now it's only one window in the master area again. It's basically, yeah, that's all shared with DVM. Then you can minimize. So now we've minimized one window, so they will be typically displayed at the bottom here. And minimize another one, yeah. So if you want to maximize, for example, 5, then you can use this focus to the end window, so prefix G and then 5, and yeah, now it's maximized again, or restored it again. So that's basically that. And you can maximize stuff, now you have only a full screen for only one window. Yeah, that's basically a layout. So the full screen was actually a layout which was applied. And the layout is just a way to place or to organize the windows on the available space. And with mod space, we can cycle through them. So that's the grid. So it tries to divide the screen space in equal regions. There above, again, is a small symbol which kind of indicates which layout you're currently in. So that's top tiling. So basically, now you have the master area here above, and below are the other windows. Full screen. And this is the default vertical stack tiling. Yeah, so you can either cycle through them as I did now, or you can activate one specifically. There are also some other ones like Fibonacci, which kind of, emulates the Debian logo in some way.
You're saying source tabble, so it's more than one file?
The layouts are included, they are C files which are then included into the main file.
Ah, great.
And so you can compile it out in your config.h and then won't load your binary. If you're worried about that kind of stuff. The tiling concept, it's again the same as in DVM, but I think that's something which is misunderstand a lot, or as we will see, it's kind of a superset of workspace functionality, but it can be more powerful. And so we have a static set of tags, and every window must contain or must be tagged with at least one tag. And then if we go back here, so the tags in this by default are just the numbers 1 through 5 here above. Again, you can change them to, IRC, mail, the lock, whatever. Yeah, and then a view is always a subset of the tag, so you can always select some tags which you want to display. And I think it's best if I illustrate this now. So basically, at the moment, all windows which exist have only one tag, and that's the one. And now I can basically move to workspace 2. in the traditional world, that is display all windows being tagged 2, and that's none currently. So if we now create a window, that's a new window, so always get the currently active tag. So now this window here will be tagged with 2. Yeah, and what can we do now? Yeah, now we can basically enable more tags. So at the moment we're just displaying all windows being tagged 2. Now we would like to show also the ones being tagged 1. So we can basically enable that. Now what this does now here, it's maybe a bit hard to read, but it changed the color. Yeah, maybe I should go to another work. Yeah. Basically what it tries to indicate is that at the moment tag 1 and tag 2 are both active now. And that's basically all windows. So by now we have just modified the view, that is the tags we display, but we can now also do the other way around. We can tag individual windows. So we can say this should go to tag 4. And now it moved basically because we set the tag to 4, so it's no longer tagged by 1, and so it disappears from our view. And now it should also be a bit clear. Yeah, so at the moment the first 2 are displayed. Yeah. Yeah, and we can also toggle tags. But basically what I want to emphasize here is that you can use it as a workspace mechanism, but it is also a bit more powerful because you can select multiple like workspaces at the same time. And yeah, I quite like it. Then the status bar, yeah, we've seen that if you start it by default, it's nothing at all. That's actually because of the scroll back buffering for ST. But you can have a status bar. There's a demo script. It's basically, so this one displays the time. But what it does is just it reads from a named pipe. So you can basically write whatever you want to it. And what the status bar is just an example. It basically is a while loop which sleeps for 60 seconds and then pipes the data output to this named pipe. Yeah, then we can hide the status bar, or we can toggle its position, so now it's at the bottom. Like, these are the 2 options, top or bottom. Yeah, I think that's already covered, so when you start EVTM, you can say how many lines it should capture, so scroll back history size, and then you can scroll up and down. As you probably know it from your regular terminal emulator. Then we have keyboard multiplexing. So if you have multiple windows, you can enable this mode, and now you can code stay in parallel, basically. It's sometimes handy if you have to do the same thing on multiple machines. Yeah, interactive things which are maybe a bit hard to script. Then copy and paste. Yeah, and also as you notice now, then both title bars will be blue, so all affected windows basically are blue while in this multiplexing mode. Now we're back again. So now this is now the copy mode. Basically what it did, it piped the scroll back history into your editor and displayed it in the same window. So now Yeah, you can, it's your regular editor now. You can search for stuff in here.
It's like Vim, but it doesn't.
It's like Vim, but more powerful.
Now
do you have a nano mode? Do you have a nano mode?
Nano mode?
Yeah.
No, no,
I don't
it's
like
my,
him,
it's,
you know.
It's my own editor, it's called Fist. Basically, you can now select, we can now select this nice looking cow, we can write, basically, now it will inform us or produce a warning because it will now basically reduce the file to the current selection. And because this is a destructive operation, then you should be sure what you're doing. So we have to specify an exclamation mark. And now we're back in DVTM, and it should now have copied the cow into its internal buffer. So if we now open, for example, the editor again, and then we... Yeah, that's actually a problem. Then, yeah, that wasn't so... Okay, that was good. I've overwritten it now. So again, we select what we want to copy. Yeah, now we paste it. Or maybe to show that it's actually... So basically what we did, we copied it from the scrollback history. Why is it in German? Yeah, because
why
my...
Why is the cow screwed up?
Yeah!
Orientation. You know, nano is a bit too smart here.
Okay, now I don't know. Yeah, so what it does, as I said, it pipes the scrollback history to your preferable editor and then... keeps what the editor writes to standard output, and to make this work with other editors, it actually creates, there's a, like this utility tool which creates a temporary file, so it receives everything from DVTM via standard input, writes it to a temporary file, executes the editor with this temporary file, and then whatever remains in this file when the editor is closed is then copied by DVTM, basically. Yeah, that are to cover the key bindings by default. Then, yeah, window title. So basically there's like this terminal escape sequences which is supported, so you can basically set window titles which are then displayed up top. Some applications also make use of this.
Can you insert a few end lines there?
Hmm?
Can you insert a few end lines there?
Yeah. I mean, no. it will probably just take the last one. But yeah, that's basically just print that. But yeah, it just keeps the last line. So the most recently seen best. Yeah, then there's some kind of urgent flag. So for example, if you have an IRC session, you can maybe configure your client to issue a bell character if you're mentioned in something, and this will then be seen as yeah, okay, no, I need
just type bell, right?
No?
Did I miss that? Yeah, that works. Basically, what should happen is that it should now blink here, tag 1, because something happened. Maybe... Yeah, I will have to check the plate. So then, yeah, there's basic mouse support, so what, now it blinks, or it disappeared. Well, yeah, maybe ST doesn't actually blink properly. But yeah, maybe, as you can hear it here.
Maybe you shouldn't let it blink and use a different background or something.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Less it's annoying to users.
Yeah, the redrawing is a bit messed up. But yeah, now it blinks, right?
Does it also forward this to the terminal? Or the terminal can do its window management?
You mean to the outer terminal?
The outer terminal that then should raise the window or something like that.
Yeah, it does. But there's some like problem because at the moment this reuses AIM curses. And then, well, if you do mix raw I/O and curses, then yeah, maybe bad things will happen. But yeah, in theory it should work. Also here above in the Debian title bar, you see that foo, so the window title of the it should actually be of the focused window, but because here is none, it should probably reset. But yeah, so that's also forwarded in theory at least. So mouse. So if you double click, it maximizes. If you single click, it kind of focuses. If we start something like should pass the mouse event through.
The interesting thing is, does selection still work in the terminal, most likely?
I'm not a heavy mouse user, so
I have a patch for that for ST, but dangerous to turn on.
Yeah.
Well, no, but mouse selection should work properly.
No, but if you turn on mouse reporting in the terminal,
You have to press shift or control, or you can. There's a command line flag which disables mouse capturing. Then, if you don't need this crap with the mouse,
well, the thing is, I do want some mouse speed. Actually, the one I'm about to ask for is what does the scroll do? Does mouse scrolling do something?
Yeah, this is very
not sure. We can look into it later. Yeah, because with this trackpad. Not sure. But for those of you who like the mouse, there's some basic support for it. And scripting capabilities. Basically, that's actually also something which often comes up with my editor. So, whose job is it to manage windows? Should the editor manage the windows, or should your regular window manager do it? It's job also for editing Windows, and so it would be nice to have some way to control, basically to create new windows over some kind of scripting capability, and at the moment that's very rudimentary, again over a named pipe, so you can, there are a few hard-coded like commands, which you can pipe to the common FIFO, and then it will do something. Because it's a named pipe, it's currently unidirectional, meaning you can't do like queries, list your windows and stuff. So yeah, basically it's very limited and experimental, but something for the future. Yeah, and then Abduka, basically, now we have covered window management in the console. We have seen it's quite dynamic, it's fun, it's nice. But sometimes the network fails, for example, if we are working on remote hosts. And then, we don't want to lose our work. And that's basically what Abduka does. And it's really similar to Detached. Almost. But the basic functionality is the same.
There's a space. So he was doing hypnosisation was for hypnosis, like connection. So you have to take space before people.
Nothing. It just brings.
Yeah, this is actually
true. This is just simply too brainwashing.
Yeah, that's actually useful SSH trick if you're not familiar with it. It's basically in and SSH has kind of an in-band protocol. So if you
telnet had this.
So that's basically if you're in a SSH session and press enter, tilde, and question mark, then you will see this message and then you see what's available. And in practice, you probably only want to use the first one, which is termination. That's basically when your SSH session is stuck somewhere and then you don't want to, doesn't react to Control C or whatever, and you don't want to close the window. So that's how you kill it for good. And then the second command here is basically you reconnect, you start Abduco, and you attach to an existing session. If it doesn't exist, then it creates it. That's what the capital A does, basically. So ideally, you should be where you left off. How does it work? It's a simple client server architecture. It's basically just an echo server. Basically, it reads from the program. It supervises in some sense and then forwards it over a Unix domain socket, forwards the raw output of the Unix domain socket, and it doesn't attempt to interpret or preserve terminal state. And we will actually see that has its pros and its cons. Basically, it's really simple, but it also has some issues. So it has no state machine, no knowledge about the current terminals. So we can create sessions. We can detach from a session with this key combination. And then we can reattach again. And by default, it will always start BBTM. So here it's just a session name which is given. You can here also give or specify an additional command which you want to start, but if you leave it out, then it will default to BBTM. Now if we do that, so again, now we're in a BBTM session called demo. If we start again, then we'll see it. We can detach from it and list the session. So we see the demo session was created. We can attach it to it again and we're back to where we left.
What happens if you attach it to the session within the session?
Yeah, bad things will happen. So the session list, we've seen basically what's trying to tell you, there's a single character which indicates the status. Basically, a star indicates that someone is currently connected to it. Without the symbol, it's still running, but currently no client is connected. And the plus sign is like the session terminated while you weren't watching it. Then here it displays the last activity in some sense of the session when the process ID of the server, which can be useful as we will see later, and the session name basically. So there's no output buffering, so if your session terminates while you're not looking at it, then you won't get back the output. But at least it captures the exit status. So what it does here is it starts a new session called demo, but it doesn't connect to it. That's what the minus n option does. And then it starts bin false. So and then it immediately tries to reattach to it, or to attach to it. But then, session already terminated, and it gets you the exit status, which was 1 or false here in that case.
Then shared sessions, so sometimes it's useful to have multiple clients connected to the same session for like team programming or code review or whatever. And yeah, the problem here there is that the pseudo terminal that's provided can only have one size, obviously. And so it always uses the size of the most recently connected client. So yeah, should make sure that your host terminal application is large enough to display everything. Then we have read-only session, but that's not a security feature. Basically, it's just to prevent interruptions or so. For example, if you're just idling in some IRC channel and the cat jumps on the keyboard and you don't want to spam the channel, then you can basically attach read-only mode, and what it does, it basically discards all input. So it just, but as I said, it's no security feature, so on the file system someone can still, if it has read access to your socket or corresponding to the session, it can still do whatever he wants with it. For that you can use SOCAT. Basically the idea is here that to use SOCAT in the unidirectional mode, and basically forward the socket from the private session to a read-only location where people can't write to it. So in that way the file system permission should, or directory permission should be effective, if you won't need that. And then resize handling, you ask that basically, we just deliver a signal to the running application, and then it's up to them to basically adapt to the new size. Then socket recreation, that's a nice trick or tip. Case somehow your executable gets lost, or more likely your session socket gets lost, it gets destroyed by something, someone deletes it. Then you can list all Abduco processes which are reparented to pint 1 because they're demonized, so their parent is in it. And then you can list open files to see which process has which socket open. And then you can send user 1 signal to the Abduco process and it will recreate the socket on the file system. And if the executable is also lost, then you can, or at least on Linux, you can copy it out of the proc directory, and then you can work regularly again.
I think there's actually an actual socket in the proc FS if you explore.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's like /bit/fd/socket D number.
Yeah, that's
we can connect
true, yeah.
to it.
Yeah,
that's
true, right. Yeah. People socket, but
really?
It was the same.
Yeah, but
there's FD info for that.
It won't obviously be listed in the session list because Abduco just looks in some default directory, so if you do it that way, then your session list should still work because it will be once again back to normal. And then yeah, some environment variables, so that's the default command basically, as we've seen. If it's left out, then we use this environment variable which defaults to DBTM. And then, yeah, we have two more environment variables which denote the session name and the location of the socket, which can be useful, for example, in DBTM. If you, in the status bar, want to display in which session you are, then you can integrate that in your status bar script, and it will display it then. So yeah, basically that's the limitation. So because Abduco operates on the raw I/O level, it does not preserve the terminal state across sessions. And this has some artifacts, because if you terminal applications typically initialize the terminal in some state, for example, for mouse events or whatever, and then if you connect with another terminal which didn't yet have this initialization performed, then things will be messed up. And so the current plan to fix this is basically that Abduka would send a signal when the session is reattached to DVTM, which knows in which state the terminal should be, and then it basically would reinitialize the terminal to the way it expects it, and then everything should work, at least in theory. Yeah, so to close out, it's really been neglected in the past couple of years. There's some bugs which, for example, macOS users, it's currently broken for them, apparently, because their operating system doesn't really support pselect portably. The terminal state, the cross session I just mentioned, and then I'm thinking about ripping out the terminal emulation, because as you saw, the initial announcement was like 10 years ago, and it used some other library at the time, and it was never really written to the specification. So there are rarely some glitches, and it just doesn't really make sense to maintain yet another terminal emulation library. So there are multiple options here. Either we could kind of use the terminal emulation part of ST, so of the sackless or simple terminal, or we could use, the problem there is that it's not really in a library ready consumable way. There's also port to Wayland, which is also not really nicely integrated. Yeah, so that's one option, and then Vturn, that's what NeoVim and I think also Vim recently basically bundles nowadays. So that's, I briefly looked at it, it has a rather nice API because it doesn't expect any memory allocation. It's also suitable for kernel mode usage, which some people apparently did. And so at libticket, it's basically a modern cursus replacement which has no global state, which should be a bit nicer to use, hopefully. Yeah, the scripting capabilities, and the last point is some bureaucracy regarding to the license. So to the conclusion, we try to use multiple tools and combine them in a sensible way. It has some raw edges, but I think conceptually it would be a much nicer architecture. It's non-bloated, so DVTM is about 4,000 lines of code. Abduka is like 1,000 lines or something. So it's rather small. It's in some way also bare bones, limited, but at least for my use case, it works as a chip. And with that, we come to the end. The repo, so we have also non-GitHub mirrors for those who like those. You can send patches by email if you prefer. If you want to discuss about it on IRC, then it's probably best to join the FIS editor channel, which is somehow related, and there are about 20 people or so in there, so maybe somebody will respond if you're lucky. And that's probably all.
Why the name Abduka?
It's Latin.
Yes, continue.
it was suggested by a friend. No, it's Latin for reattachment or something. I will look at that thing. Basically, I'm terrible at naming stuff.
Abduka is his first person present. No? It's been a long time.
Yeah, for me too.
Abduka, that means to guide away. And Abduka is first person singular present, if I remember correctly. So I'm taking away, it basically means I'm taking away. Or guiding away. Or basically...
Well, so this is related to English word abduct.
Yeah, that too, probably. But I'm never sure with Latin, because sometimes English words, even though they sound the same, they're not exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Hope it wasn't a waste of your time.